This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
All right, and welcome back to your weekly edition of Cinema Recap. Got your hosts, John Bonham, joined by Mark Jackson. Mark, how was the weekend?
It was a pretty eventful weekend, man. Not for anything I really did, but just kind of in the cinema world. I mean, you know, it's, I think it's basically a record-breaking weekend at this point, so something we're definitely going to get into.
Yeah, man. God, after such a nightmare of a September with, you know, almost nothing of interest, I think October came out real strong so far.
Yeah, best foot forward for sure, just money-making-wise. We'll get into the quality of some of this stuff, but yeah, I'm sure Hollywood is very, very pleased right now.
Absolutely. I don't know if you remember, but we were way off on our estimates for the top two at the box office.
Very, very off. I do remember, and before we got on, I was kind of thinking, you know, we might have to try to make a game of this. You know, the guy who comes the closest, you know, with the box office estimations, if we kind of keep doing this from now to the end of the year, maybe that person's got to buy the other guy like a nice Christmas present or like a DVD or a Blu-ray or something. But yeah, I was looking at projections. We said, I think both around like no more than 45 million, but yeah, I mean the Venom numbers just blew it out of the water.
Yeah, it was huge. So we will certainly dive deeper into that. But before we do, let's go ahead and kick things off with some real news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone!
And honestly, you know, it's kind of funny. We feel like last time we had some decent news to talk about, but no real, you know, movies of interest from the weekend. Kind of the opposite this week. Not a whole lot going on out there in Hollywood, it seems like.
I can't disagree with you there. Very, very, you know, kind of a bare week, if you will. A lot of, like, opinion stuff, but nothing really of concrete substance to really delve into.
Yeah, but you did mention a Halloween sequel's already greenlit, correct?
Yep. Apparently the production Blumhouse has already greenlit it, and you know, obviously this is a vote of confidence for what they've got. And by all accounts, you know, I know you kind of aren't super high on it, but by all accounts, it seems like the bulk of people have seen the movie. Critics and audiences seem all in. So I'm guessing it's just like a double down of what we're about to see in about a week and a half now.
Yeah, I mean, that's always a good sign, you know, when they greenlit a sequel before they even released the movie. So apparently it's got some good word of mouth spreading from the initial screenings. Any word on casting? Is Jamie Lee Curtis coming back?
No real word on casting, to be honest. It still seems like, you know, they've got the green light in front of them, but I'm guessing, you know, just to kind of keep this stuff underneath wraps before, you know, Halloween 2018 goes live in about, like I said, a week and a half. No real word on casting. My kind of initial takeaway is, I mean, I guess it's cool that they're doing another Halloween, but obviously I think we got to this point where they had to reboot it and kind of wipe away all the different installments and, you know, side tracks and side plots and really just focus on a sequel that wiped away everything and came back 40 years later. So I think I'd really just want for them to maybe not say a whole bunch and really just kind of funnel all their efforts towards what this is like. And then maybe after, you know, we've had like a month or two to detox, then maybe drop the news. Okay, we're all in on this Halloween 2018 sequel.
Sure. Well, at the very least, you know, as you mentioned, I'm not exactly high on this one. And I think the Halloween, I guess the franchise jumped the shark for me quite some time ago. But you told me Danny McBride was a writer. Now we've got, you know, a sequel greenlit. It's got some decent reviews early. So I don't know. I think my excitement might be building a little bit for this one. So
there we go.
Hopefully all the positivity continues. But other than that, Mark, anything else on the news front?
No, nothing really pops out. So like I said, it felt like an overall really, really quiet week. You know, I really didn't get to take a look at you know, the week's news until maybe Saturday afternoon. And I was scrolling through. I said, yeah, there really wasn't a whole bunch that that dropped that felt that it was something that we needed to really, really address. So no, I'm it's been a light week, I think, and I think you're in agreement. So let's move forward and get into the old box office, shall we?
That sounds good. And before we do, we'll just pause for a moment here to hear a few words about some friendly podcasts of thatmomentin.com.
We'll return after these announcements.
I was having serious problems in the bedroom and in the car and on the bus, but I couldn't help but think there had to be something out there for people suffering just like me.
Podcast dysfunction affects 6 out of 7 cinema geeks out there, but there is help. The Simplistic Reviews Podcast.
Symptoms of the Simplistic Reviews Podcast may include loss of sleep, loss of hair, longer erections, last family get-together, bleeding of eyes, ears, and anus, divorce, hated by town folk, rash, the ability to drink alcohol and podcast at the same time, mansplaining, weight gain, weight loss, people with severe podcasting games, depression, happiness, growth of boobs and hair on chest, constant peeing, watery eyes, and 3 additional inches on your penis, and if you don't have a penis, you will now.
Thanks to the Simplistic Reviews Podcast, I'm no longer bored in the bedroom. Plus, I have a perpetual erection. Although I think I'm going blind.
The Simplistic Reviews Podcast. A small price to pay for entertainment.
Hello, everybody. My name is Daverne, and I am the host of the Cinema Recall Podcast, which you can find at thatmomentin.com. On each episode, myself, along with a great guest, we will discuss in detail an iconic scene from a classic movie. So come check us out. We are available on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and most other places you can find podcasts. We are also on Facebook, just type in Cinema Recall. And we are also on Twitter at @cinema_recall. We hope you enjoy the show, and thank you for listening.
All right, and we're back, and we can go ahead and dive into the week of October 5th through 7th.
I'm putting the burden of lousy movies back on you. It's very simple. If you stop going to bad movies, they'll stop making bad movies.
Uh-oh, the jig is up.
Big weekend, opening weekend of October, as we mentioned. September kind of sucked. It was really lackluster. Not a whole lot of interest came out, but, I mean, man, October just blew the lid off things.
Record-breaking weekend, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, two huge movies were released. So let's get through the bottom three really quick, since it's all ones that we've talked about. But in fifth, The House with a Clock in Its Walls, coming in with $7.3 million. In fourth, we've got Night School, dropping from number one last week with $12.2 million. And surprisingly enough, we got Smallfoot, that was last week ranked behind Night School, actually had a stronger week this week with $14.9 million. That's the animated feature about, you know, the big, or the, I guess the Abominable Snowman or Bigfoot or what have you, coming across
humans,
you know, mankind. Yeah. And yeah, so I'd say that's, you know, pretty strong for that one, still in the, you know, not only in the top five, but also overtook Night School at the box office. So Mark, anything you wanted to touch on for either of those three?
Not really a ton. Unfortunately, I still haven't got to Night School. I'll be honest, it might be a little questionable if I can get to it before some of this other really good pertinent stuff comes out. But no, talked a little bit about A House with a Clock in Its Walls. Solid, unspectacular, you know, movie, but it actually might be Eli Roth's best that he's done, which is kind of surprising. But still holding that top five spot. Nothing really surprising. I think we both thought that these the movies that finished 1-2 were going to finish in that order. I think it was just we vastly underestimated what they do.
Yeah, so just to go back really quick, I think I estimated Venom around $56 million and A Star is Born at about $30 million. And if I remember correctly, you gave Venom about $60 million and A Star is Born about $25 million.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right.
Okay, so in the two spot, excuse me, we've got A Star is Born, which opened to $41.2 million. I mean, just had a monster opening, which, I mean, not only was that surprising, but it's not uncommon that you see, you know, Oscar movies that don't really open big. They're not always that popular in the box office.
Right.
So to see one that opened this successfully against a comic book franchise is just, you know, pretty shocking. And I think it speaks volumes to how, you know, how good the movie is, how much quality was put into it, the acting, the directing. You know, we were chatting a second ago before we kicked off here, and I literally just walked through the door and got back from the screening of it. And my God, man, it was an emotional toll and a roller coaster that I went through.
Yeah, I have to, you know, unequivocally agree with you there. You know, this seems like it hit on all the right notes. I know that's kind of a musical pun, but it really did. You know, this is Bradley Cooper's first directorial foray. And by all accounts, you know, I think he pretty much nails about every aspect of it. His cinematography is great. I think he worked with a longtime Darren Aronofsky cinematographer. So the first thing I kind of noticed, you know, when that scene comes on where he's just kind of playing across this 50,000, you know, crowd, and you know, you really just feel the electricity, and you really just feel like the moment. I mean, I felt like I was, you know, kind of there, you know, sitting in the crowd when Bradley Cooper was doing his thing. And I mean, there's just a real level of authenticity across all of it. I kind of wrote this in my piece on thatmoment.com where, you know, I felt that, you know, if Bradley Cooper's Jackson Maine was a real life person, I could see him owning the billboard because he felt like that legit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like he just had this vibe and this aura about him. It's like, yeah, I could totally see this guy, you know, competing against the Brad Paisleys of the world and the Keith Urbans. He just really had that vibe. Like he had the demeanor of a big star, you know, superstar singer.
Yeah.
And I think that's a credit to Bradley Cooper. I also think it's a credit to Lady Gaga, where I watched this movie and I thought about it afterwards. And I was like, I really don't know who else could have played those roles. So I think it's just, again, kudos to both of them. The singer, you know, Lady Gaga, who kills it, and, you know, Bradley Cooper, who we all knew he can act. This might be his best acting role he's done, but he really put his all into actually, like, becoming a legitimate singer. Is he, like, is he on the level of guys I mentioned? No, but he does carry his own.
Oh, God, yeah. I thought he was phenomenal. I thought his voice sounded great. We might have talked about this previously, but how, you know, Bradley Cooper, I think Lady Gaga, she kind of forced Bradley Cooper's hand, and she was like, I'll help you with the singing, but you have to do it, and then you help me on the acting side of things. So I mean, both, you know, kind of crossing over into to other realms than they're traditionally known for, but my God, they were both phenomenal.
I
would not be surprised if either one of them wins, you know, the Oscar for best actor or best actress. The live performances that they filmed, you know, I'm not sure how they did it, but it was super well done. Like you said, you feel like you're there. They sounded great. They had awesome chemistry. I thought the supporting acting was phenomenal too. I would have loved to see a little more Chappelle, but mm-hmm. the small part he had, I thought he was great as, you know, kind of a lifelong friend of Bradley Cooper. Definitely some powerful scenes between him and his brother, Sam Elliott.
Yeah, I think he's a name you got to watch out for, for best supporting actor. I don't know his screen time might get him the nomination, but I mean, I think he's a guy that absolutely could score one.
Yeah, and I really don't want to give too much away because, you know, it's definitely a movie you want to come into with, you know, I would say a certain, just, you know, not really knowing what to expect, so I don't want to ruin any
sure.
plot, but kind of the transgression of the relationship between, you know, the two brothers, I thought it was just extremely well done. But no, it's an interesting movie. And for those who don't know, it's just, you know, Bradley Cooper is kind of an aging, you know, country or rock star. And, you know, he stumbles across Lady Gaga, who's more of a, you know, like a bar performer. And they fall in love and he helps her become, you know, the next big thing in music. And he's also struggling pretty deeply with alcoholism and pill addiction.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, I thought it was just really interesting. You know, you see it so commonly amongst rock stars that suffer from these things, and to get some more insight into, you know, what kind of personal life somebody might have to drive them to that, and the toll it takes on a person. It was just, man, it was really well done. There's some dark parts. I love the first half. You know, it was just more of their relationship and her becoming a big thing. And it was more, you know, uplifting, where the second half is where, you know, you start to see a little bit more of the toll that drugs and alcohol can take on someone. But
right.
Just phenomenal movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, and just building off of that, I've seen some criticism towards the second half. To me, I liked both halves enough. The second half definitely feels, like you said, more of a results of kind of the actions that Cooper's character has been through, but also just sort of analysis and criticism of the movie industry. You know, when someone comes in with originality, a lot of times they have to give up some of that to ultimately be what they thought they wanted to be. So you kind of see that with one of the characters that the people that Gaga's character comes across. So I thought that was well done. The guy actually played that character. Again, it's talking kind of vague here because it is more or less still a basic story. It hits on a lot of, common themes and plot beats, but the acting and the production definitely kind of raises it there. A couple of qualms. The one thing I think maybe Cooper I don't want to say he just flat out drops the ball on, but the one thing that I'm kind of iffy on, editing is a little weak in spots. I think sometimes, it's not as fluid as I would have liked. It just feels like there are certain gaps occasionally where you feel like there could be a better transition scene from one piece to another. I don't want to say it felt herky-jerky at all. It could have had a little bit more consistency when you're talking about just the editing part. And that's just not solely Cooper, it's the editor too. But aside from that, I mean, that's kind of the only thing I'm kind of a little lukewarm on. But it's still like a really solid movie. One of the guys I kind of work with, he's like, this is kind of a funny story, but one of the guys I work with, he said, my girlfriend really wants me to go to this and I'm not sure about it. And this was like Thursday and I saw the movie on Monday. And I told him, she's going to love it, but honestly, I think you're going to like it a lot too. I do think it's a movie where, you don't have to feel weird if speaking from a guy here, like, oh, I got to go, get dragged to see this movie. Like, no,
you're right.
You'll have a really good time, I think. And the music is, there are a lot of tracks on here where, I can put on Spotify and, I'm going to, jam out, kind of, nod my head to. And if there's one, I think, guarantee that we can make when A Star Is Born, I think that it's pretty much penciled in to win Best Original Song in some way, shape, or form.
It has to, right?
Yeah.
What was the big song? Was it Shallows?
I would say Shallows. There's a song at the end. The name's kind of slipping me, but it's like, Never Love You Again. I might be butchering that too, but it's a very, very powerful moment because it's kind of juxtaposed with another moment. I think, we could see two songs from this movie nominated for Best Original Song, and I would be pretty much floored if we haven't even seen some of the other, Oscar hopefuls come out, but I'm really kind of, rack my brain to see what else Hollywood is going to put out in the next couple months that's an Oscar hopeful that could put out a song that could, legitimately challenge the tracks we hear in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, these are songs that you'd have no problem just throwing on the radio and, jamming out to. They're great. They're very well done. There's no way that they get beat for music at the Oscars. I'd be absolutely floored.
Right.
But yeah, before we move on, I wanted to point out one of my favorite parts is, her first performance when he kind of drags her out on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was so well done. And when she starts to get comfortable and then she starts belting out the music, I wanted to stand up and start clapping. At the end of it. It was just awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah. Everything about that scene was bliss. You had the lighting. I kind of remember everything basked in red and like the way the scene was constructed and, the space was just utilized wonderfully. Yeah. It was a moment that gave you some chills for real.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, it was cool to see, and it's got to be so overwhelming when you walk out there and the lights are just shining in your eyes and surrounded by people. It kind of gives you that perspective when they're on stage. So the cinematography was great. It was, I don't know, I'm just kind of on a high since I just saw the movie, but really, really enjoyed it.
Right.
And with that, I'm sure everybody can guess what the number one movie is by process of elimination. Obviously, it's Venom in the number one spot. No surprise there. I think the only surprise would be how great it did.
Mm-hmm.
I said 56, you said 60. It opened to a little bit over 80 million. So, I mean, just an absolute monster opening. And did you say that was the biggest October?
Yeah, it was according to Box Office Mojo. I think the biggest movie before that was The Martian, I want to say, and I think that was 2016, 2015, 2016. Yeah, it's it cleared that movie pretty well. So, no, I misspoke. It was Gravity back in 2013, 55.7, but it's still, you know, 25 million over what that movie did. So, yeah, especially when you start factoring in, you know, kind of the critical standing of this movie, which isn't great. But it does seem like there is a divide between generally what the critics think and kind of what the general audience thinks. If we're, you know, going off of that and kind of some of the comments and some of the thoughts that are seen on Reddit and whatnot.
Well, without further ado, I know you did check this one out, so why don't you give us some thoughts here?
Yeah. So I was able to get this movie today. Went to a 9:30 a.m. showing. Well, I was going in and I was kind of one of those people too who had really just a lowest of kind of expectations, was hearing a lot of bad stuff, not really a ton of good things. So my expectations were, again, pretty low set. After coming out of it, I'm kind of in the middle of the fence. There are some things I liked, and I think by the sheer fact that I wouldn't mind seeing Venom again, I guess more or less it really does its job.
I mean, that's a good sign.
Yeah, you know, the mid-credit scene, not going to spoil anything there, but I do like potentially where they might go with Venom and kind of his old arch nemesis or, you know, character he's had some history with. So I'll leave it at that.
So is there a mid-credits and an end-credits scene?
You know, there is a mid-credits scene. I do think there's an end-credits scene. I didn't stay for the end-credits, sadly. I usually always do, but I got word of kind of what the end-credits scene was, and, you know, hopefully sure. I'm not spoiling anything, but people who are listening might have already seen it. I think it's just something to do with, like, a sneak peek of Spider-Man into the Spider-Verse, so I don't know how long that went, but that, I believe, is the end-credits scene.
Okay. Well, man, I don't know if everybody else is like this, but so many times, especially in, you know, the comic book and the Marvel movies, as soon as a movie ends, I find myself pulling my phone out and Googling, you know, is there a mid-credit scene, and then reading if it's worth it. I wish they just announced at the beginning, like, hey, you're going to want to stay.
Yeah. I guess it's just kind of one of the things where, you know, we've been through it so much, or people kind of just, maybe the studios feel like, you know, these people should be conditioned at this point to just stay. So I'm kind of with you, though.
Yeah, you're right.
Because going back, I don't know if you saw Ant-Man and the Wasp, you know, I saw the mid-credit scene. That was pretty good because it did connect with what happened with Avengers Infinity War. But if I had the opportunity to kind of pull up my phone and see, oh, there's another, you know, end-credit scene where it's just some ant, you know, kind of drumming away as all this stuff's going on, I probably would have just, you know, dipped out before it actually came on. So I'm with you there.
Yeah, I usually just stay for the mid one because the end one's usually more, you know, a gag or just kind of a funny bit.
Yeah, it's a
whereas the middle
point.
One's a little more, you know, tied into the franchise or the series. But not to go off on a tangent there.
Yeah,
but, just some food for thought. So
I talked about a little just the end credit scene. I guess I can get a little bit into the movie without spoiling anything. You know, I think Venom works in a couple of ways. In a lot of ways, it is kind of a romance between not the people you actually think, you know, Tom Hardy and his romantic interest played by Michelle Williams. Really, the romance is between Tom Hardy and the symbiote, obviously known as Venom. Their kind of buddy cop chemistry is kind of endearing, to be honest. There are a lot of moments where the humor is kind of corny, but a lot of times, you know, Venom does say something funny because he ultimately lives in Tom Hardy's head. And he lives in his body. So kind of hearing his voice a couple times say, you know, dumb things or say things that, you know, are really dry, really sarcastic, does make for some pretty good chuckles. So on that front, they do have like a pretty good movie. When you start throwing some of the other stuff about, you know, the villain he actually has to go up against played by Riz Ahmed, that's a little bit of a weak spot. I like Riz Ahmed. Not really a whole bunch to do here. The CGI, it's okay in spots, but a lot of times Venom really just does rely on the darkness, you know, to kind of hide or, you know, mask what either is not proficient at showing, or it's there to mask, you know, we really have these cool deaths, but we don't want to show this because it's PG-13. So, especially the final act, it falls kind of in that Justice League, you know, CGI, you know, love fest where you can't really see a whole bunch of going on. It's, you know, CGI thing fighting another CGI thing. And I really didn't know what was happening a whole bunch. You know, it was kind of a mess on that front. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else I really want to get to. But Tom Hardy, he was a good Venom. You know, I thought that they got into his backstory a little bit. I see that some people would really don't like the first 30 minutes. I'm a little more lukewarm on the first 30 minutes, but I do think that there are some pieces of it that didn't necessarily need to be shown. One of the things I'm hearing is that they cut like 40 minutes out of this movie in some way, shape, or form. So I'd love to see, where it kind of was, because there are some things that I feel like could either have fleshed out his character or things maybe that didn't necessarily need to be there. It does take a little while to actually get the Venom. I will say that. So if you're anxious on that front, you might be a little bit disappointed, but you know, it's
kind of like when that's drawn out though in movies, when, you know, in The Dark Knight Rises, where I don't think you see Batman for the first 45 minutes.
Yeah.
I kind of like when they build it, if they do it right. So if it's just, you know, if it's boring and you're just dying for the action to happen, it can kind of suck. But did they build the tension, you know, in a way that wasn't just a snooze fest here?
I mean, I'd say kind of just on the strength of Tom Hardy. You know, he is a presence. He does have charisma. So even when a lot of the stuff around him isn't really up to snuff, he does have a way of, you know, keeping the viewer's interest. He did keep mine, you know, until stuff finally started happening and officially, not really spoiled, but, you know, the symbiote eventually enters him. So, I'd say, you know, he's a movie star. I do like that this time, you know, we kind of see more of him instead of, you know, something that's on his face, or he's got a, you know, emote on his eyes all the time, which he's talented at. But so I do think in some ways he's kind of getting pigeonholed in that type of thing. So I'm happy that he didn't have to do that so much. With that said, there are definitely some questionable scenes in here where it's just what was the director thinking? What were they kind of going for here? Because there are occasional moments where the movie just kind of turns in a left heel for like 5 minutes, and it's just it doesn't really coalesce like I wanted it to. But with that said, no, I think if you go and give it a view at some point, you're not going to love this. But I do think at the end of the day, you say, okay, there are some things that need to be worked on with Venom, maybe a different director, you know, maybe spend a little bit more money on CGI. But there's the opportunity here, you know, to do something good with the next movie. Okay. And I still don't know how it's going to eventually fit into Spider-Man, if it ever will. But, you know, I think they've got the basis of something worthwhile here.
Okay. You know, it's getting, you know, kind of across the board reviews, you know, 7.1 out of 10 on IMDb, which is a decent score, 32% on Rotten Tomatoes, not that great. Looks like 95% of Google users liked the movie. So I think there's definitely some positivity that the fans are finding for it. So one of my concerns is, you know, I think my biggest one was the CGI. I thought it looked bad going into it. But my other one is Tom Hardy's such a good actor in action roles, you know, when he's, whether he's, you know, Mad Max or Warrior, you know, where he's got all this great hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
My concern going in is that all of that was just going to be CGI as the symbiote. Is that kind of what happened here? Or does Tom Hardy actually get any good action sequences himself?
I'd say maybe if we broke it down percentage-wise, 90 to 95% is symbiote, wow, you know, doing action stuff. 5% is maybe, you know, Tom Hardy doing like a Falcon punch or something. But no, if you kind of wanted him to really kind of throw in some fisticuffs, you're not really going to get that in this movie. You know, the very much the action is symbiote heavy. So, yeah, like I said, the CGI, you saw it in the trailers. There's the occasional standout, but a lot of it really isn't good. They're going to need either a better director or, you know, going to have to spend some more money for the next movie. Definitely.
All right. Well, hopefully with how strongly this opened, it gives them the leeway to pay a different director more and up the budget even further next time around.
Right.
Okay. And that is your week recap of October 5th through 7th. And now let's look ahead to things.
Coming soon to theaters.
Upcoming next week, you know, the October 12 releases, we've got some pretty good ones coming out. We've got Bad Times at the El Royale, got First Man, Goosebumps 2, and we've got The Oath. And actually, I don't even know what The Oath is.
It's a comedy.
It looks like it's...
It's a comedy. I think it's actually directed by Ike Barinholtz of Mad TV fame, and he's kind of done a lot of comedy movies of late where he's been a supporting bit player. I'd say in this movie, it seems like I've seen the trailer. He's definitely a main character along with Tiffany Haddish.
She's got another movie out. Wow.
Yeah. She's a name. Ever since Girls Trip, I definitely feel like this is her moment. I think it's kind of like a. It's definitely a comedy. They've got some political elements to it. I watched the trailer sound a little bit kind of Purge-esque, but obviously not with that whole, action horror tinge. But there are some elements of that, and I think it is going to kind of hold a little bit of a lens to today's society. So,
interesting.
I've only seen the trailer once, so I'm sure there's some things that I'm missing. It's definitely a movie I would like to get to if the time is afforded to me, but Ike Barinholtz directing. Didn't seem like they gave a whole bunch away in the trailer as far as laughs go. I have had movies before where I go to the trailer and, I ask myself, I think I've seen everything I've seen. I laughed a couple times, but I don't know what else I can see. But then I have movies on the other front where I've watched a trailer, especially comedy-wise, and I'm like, it's kind of okay. But when I actually get into the movie, I'm very much surprised because they save a lot of their good stuff for the movie. So I'm hoping that's the latter with The Oath.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'll have to check this one out. As I said, Goosebumps 2, sequel to the first one that featured Jack Black. I don't think he's back in this one. The first movie was, it was entertaining enough. I grew up reading those books.
Same.
So it was, it was kind of cool to see them come to life in the movie eventually. But I'm guessing this one's just, a money grab. Probably not putting a whole lot of effort into changing things up. And Jack Black's not back, so...
Actually, spoke too soon on that one. He is back in this movie. I don't think he has the same type of he is still, Arl Stein, but he doesn't have the same type of importance to the plot. I'm guessing this is kind of one of those pieces where he might have filmed 5 minutes or something. We might see him where the character's got to go and say, what's going on, and they run into Jack Black. He is in this movie, but I don't think it's going to be for as long as it was in the first movie.
Okay, I'm just reading a quick blurb on it, and it lists the cast, and it says, and Jack Black is back as the voice of Slappy, so maybe it's just his voice, and he's not doing the R.L. Stein thing, but...
Yeah.
But you are correct, he'll be back to some extent.
Yeah, I as far as the actual movie goes, I saw the first one, too. I think you and I are around the same age, kind of 28, 29, so I think we both kind of grew up with the Goosebumps books, in the... late 90s, little early 2000s. My favorite was The Haunted Mask. I don't know what your favorite was.
I think mine was what was the werewolf one?
Oh, man. I know what you're talking about, but the name's slipping me. I think it was a werewolf where they were they're a camp or something. The werewolf, was it Fever Street? I can't remember, but I know what you're talking about.
I think there's two different ones that are... So the one I'm thinking of is it's like their neighbor's a werewolf or something. There was the camp one as well.
The werewolf was it? I can't remember. Fever Swamp, but there was a camp one too.
I think it's something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then they had that whole 90s show where they had the really good theme music and they adapted a couple of them to the Fox Kids or whatever. But as far as the movie goes, I think you and I are kind of in lockstep on this one. The first one was fine. It was disposable. I think, everyone kind of our age was like, wow, we're getting some nostalgia. So I do think we kind of looked at it and we're like, we got to go just because it's Goosebumps. We grew up with this. When we came out of it, it was okay. It wasn't anything that I can really remember much of it. I remember who was the star outside of Jack Black? Dylan Minnette. He's done a couple of okay things. But aside from that, I really couldn't tell you a whole bunch of just the characters come to life, I think, and they've got to figure out how to get him back on the page. I forgot a ton of the movie, but yeah, I'm guessing the
two. Yeah, it's pretty forgettable.
I'm guessing the same. This one will probably be of similar ilk.
Right. And then the last two should be some big ones. First Man, you know, we talked about this one in pretty decent detail on our October preview, but, you know, it's reteaming director Damien Chazelle with Ryan Gosling after their success of La La Land. It's all about, you know, Neil Armstrong and his mission to the moon. So I think there's some really, really high expectations here. A lot of people are thinking this is going to be an Oscar favorite, but I do expect this one to open pretty successfully.
Yeah, I would... If I had to put some money on it, I don't know if I'm ready to say number one. I think number one, you know, next week could be very, very interesting because we'll still have Venom. I don't know if the reviews of that movie will kind of like have it to drop, but then we'll probably still have a really, really strong hole for Star is Born. But then we've got First Man. So I don't know kind of which way I'm leaning into as far as what the number one box office movie would be.
I think it's my guess is going to be it's First Man in the maybe the $50 million range. Venom will probably, you know, still do pretty successfully, maybe more of like a 35 to 40. But, you know, obviously see that steep drop off after the initial opening weekend.
OK, I'm going to say probably for First Man. I think we're both in agreement. I'm kind of a little less unsure, but I'll say $40 million for First Man.
OK. You thinking Venom under that?
Yeah, I'll go Venom 35. I don't think, you know, First Man will run away with anything. And A Star is Born, you know, God, 40 million that it made this week. I
bet it's still 20s next week.
I'll say 22 for sure.
Yeah, I think that's a safe bet. I feel like it might even be able to repeat at a higher amount than that. So we shall see. And the last one we got is Bad Times at the El Royale. You were actually fortunate enough to catch an early screening of that this week. So without spoiling anything, you want to give us some initial thoughts as well as maybe an estimate?
Yeah, absolutely. So I went to the screening on Wednesday. There are definitely some vibes of this movie. You'll get a lot of Quentin Tarantino, really, you know, out of this movie.
Okay.
We talked a little bit last week about some of the vibes I got and some of the vibes you got. We both kind of thought about Identity after seeing the trailer. We thought a little bit, I think, of Vacancy. And there's another movie I believe I might be forgetting also. But, yeah, it's definitely a film noir type of movie. Neo-noir takes place in the late 1960s. You know, thematically and in commentary, I will be honest, I was expecting a little bit more out of it. It's not really one of those movies. It's directed by Drew Goddard, who did Cabin in the Woods, and that movie was like a whole you know, satire and meta commentary about, you know, the state of horror movies and that type of stuff. So I was kind of surprised we really didn't get a whole bunch of that. Maybe there's some things that I didn't see or were overlooked. That's always a possibility. But I sound really, really basic. It was good. I'm not in love with it. I'm still kind of finalizing my thoughts. I might actually get them done tonight or tomorrow. It's good. It's definitely a little long though. It's about 2 hours and 32 minutes, and it's not one of those like Tarantino movies where, you know, he thrives on creating really, really good dialogue and, you know, characters that you're really invested into, whether you hate them or you love them. But some of these characters, you know, there are a couple that I was really compelled with and other ones that, like, I didn't care what happened to them at all. So seeing them talk and really kind of hearing them expound upon some things, I found myself bored in a couple stretches. So,
damn, that's never a good sign.
I might get into it a little more next week. I don't know if you've got any plans on seeing it. I box office projections, I would say it's probably going to come in number four, number five. I would be surprised if it opened outside of the top five. I don't see it doing huge numbers. I'll say maybe 13 million, but I'd still be surprised if it opened outside of the top five, because I do think there's some marketing there. Some people are aware of it, and it does have Chris Hemsworth. The last thing I will say, though, if you're expecting a lot of Chris Hemsworth, he's kind of been like the stud for this movie, if you will. He's not in the movie a whole bunch. I will just say that.
Oh, my God. I was worried about that.
Yeah.
God damn it.
He's got when he's there, he's got a pretty compelling character, but he's not in the movie a ton.
All right. So he's a pretty intriguing character when he's on screen and captivating, but
absolutely
just doesn't have that much.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're like expecting, we're going to see this guy like in the first 15 or 20 minutes, not so fast, my friend, according to Lee Coates. Or so, yeah.
Well, I was planning on seeing it, but I'm wondering if I should just make sure that I get to First Man now instead.
And that might be a smart, that might be a smart thing. I think First Man is definitely going to be a movie a lot of people are talking about. I mean, we still have A Star Is Born, but so I do think First Man is something that a lot of people are going to want to catch, from all walks of life, from all ages too. So yeah, I would probably put that on your list first, and if you've got some time for Bad Times, get to it.
Yeah, I'll be excited to see, First Man and kind of compare it from an Oscars perspective to A Star Is Born.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got its work cut out for it for sure. Mark, what can we expect from you this week?
Great question. So like I said, I am finalizing my thoughts on Bad Times at El Royale. Hopefully I can get it done by the end of the night. If not, you should expect it from me by the end of tomorrow. So that's on tap for me. I'm going to try to get to First Man on Tuesday. Haven't really committed yet to writing about it for thatmomentin.com, but might see a piece from me on that. Not sure yet. And we'll see about Goosebumps too. I might bite the bullet and check it out this weekend if I've got nothing going on. So yeah, still kind of up in the air, but you'll definitely see something from me in regards to Bad Times at El Royale.
Okay, good deal. Yeah, I October is one of my busiest months of the year for some reason. Just had all these trips pop up.
Right,
so,
yeah.
I'm gonna try. I don't know if anybody's committed to First Man yet, but maybe I'll try and hit that one on Thursday.
There you go.
And get a review out. But that is what I'm hoping for to have on my docket. So, Mark, with that, any final words before we hop off here?
No, like you said, seems like we're just barreling through the end of the year. Fairly big or important release upon report and release, and this week's going to be a big one too. And then the week after that, we've got Halloween. So we're in the thick of things, my friend.
We certainly are. Oscar season is here. A Star Is Born made a huge impact, and open strong, and for a lot of good reasons. So I'm excited to see some more releases coming out here in the next few weeks that are probably going to be possible contenders, and should hopefully kick off a strong end to the movie year.
Sounds like a plan.
All right, man. Well, appreciate you tuning in, and take it easy, everybody.
Take care, guys.